What, that's not a way that people can...
No, you can't start the show with that. I will not accept it.
Why? It's a quote from a movie.
I know it's a quote from a movie, but God, Dan. It's just a certain thing about the cheesiness factor, let's just say. It's very, very Velveeta.
Velveeta's not actual cheese.
Mm-mm. No. It's classified as cheese food.
It's liquid gold, as the commercials that would lead you to believe.
There's a whole disturbing Tumblr out there about that advertising campaign that they started for themselves because they thought it would be funny, but it is just horrifying.
The liquid gold part, or the eat like that guy you know?
No, the liquid gold thing. There's a whole liquid gold Tumblr thing that's just really just strange. It's one of those things where the corporate culture has hired some 20-something marketing people and said, do social media stuff, and then they did something quirky and strange, and it's really quirky and strange, and they shouldn't have done it.
Have you seen the current ads for Fiat, the car company?
Describe current. I've seen lots of ads.
Like on TV right now.
The one where they're driving through the desert, that one?
No, they've also got some sort of corporate marketing consultancy working with them, apparently. It's basically like they looped two vines and stuck them together and put this weird like cowbell music together, and then they tried to make them into like memes that are wrong. It's got this weird like jingling cowbell song, and it's a picture of a guy sitting in their car, and he takes off his sunglasses repeatedly, and it keeps saying deal with it, which is A, the opposite of that meme, and then it cuts to somebody else doing some like goofy jiggly dance where I don't know what meme they're trying to mimic there, but they're also doing that wrong, and then it just says Fiat and then some stupid tagline.
Yeah, well, commercials are bad.
It's the most... First of all, if you're going to parody a meme for a commercial, that's fine. People recognize it, but they don't even get it right, which is the entire point of the ad campaign. And there's more than one of them, and they keep showing them, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know. Memes in advertising is... It's like the first 5 minutes of any pitch meeting that should be thrown away, and then a real idea should come to the surface, but I don't know why that... It's used so prevalently.
Speaking of throwing away the first 5 minutes.
Yeah. They think this is meandering. They should hear the unedited pieces.
Oh, yeah. Just so everyone knows, that was like our 27th recording that we did before we released it. So it can only be... It can only go up from here is how I'm thinking it on the graph.
Yeah, I like that our one iTunes review said it sounds like these guys have been doing this longer than one episode, because we totally have. And we're not going to tell you exactly how long, because that would be embarrassing.
Mm-hmm. But definitely not 27.
No. No, I was going to say, I did one of those things that we're not supposed to do because we're supposed to be good technical citizens of the app community. I bought Vesper because it was on sale, like $2.99 or something. And Vesper is another one of those apps like Notesy that has the list view that I was asking for, with the title and the description in the list view. And it's actually a great app in terms of, you know, the way it works and, you know, the functionality and all that fun stuff. But I have no intention of using it since it does not sync with Dropbox. My nerdy hope is that once they have the Mac app out and it will sync to the Mac app, that I'll be able to write some sort of script to sync it between a Dropbox folder so I can use it as a normal part of my workflow.
Okay.
You use Vesper at all?
No.
You don't really do a lot of note stuff on your phone, do you?
No. I use drafts for notes, but I don't have anything set up where I pull things out of drafts on an automated basis or anything, because it too is a database like Vesper is. It's not just going to your files and making a new text file every time. It's not.
So you're saying you keep all the data in drafts?
Yeah, but I don't really take that many notes, so it'll be like, this is, you know, some artist that I saw, or this is some TV show time I want to follow up on, and that'll be it. And because you can just like write it, and then every time you open the app, like every 5 minutes or something, it resets to open a new note. So
yeah, I use it all the time, but I use it to write a quick note and then hit a Dropbox command to send it to that particular to-do folder, or I have a couple other Dropbox actions or various other little things.
See, I don't like doing that because I don't want to have duplication of things that can get out of sync later. Like if I go back and I delete or change a note, then it's not going to delete or change the Dropbox note, because it just pushes out whatever is inside the database every time you hit that command to share it. So that's why I don't generally use it for that. Now, by word, sometimes I'll take more detailed outline notes in, because that way it is just a text file, and I can just keep editing it. And I, of course, sync that with Dropbox instead of with iCloud.
Yeah, well, the drafts for me is really just, it's an input. I don't ever go back into it to read things. So stuff goes in there when I have an idea real fast, because it's quick. And when I do need to edit a note, it usually ends up in Nebulous Notes or now Editorial to open that and then modify it. But yeah, drafts is really only for the input of text. I never actually go back and revisit anything in drafts, so I guess I don't have that potential for overwriting a previous note.
Yeah.
But can we talk about some BFX nerdiness that will probably turn every viewer off? Viewer? Listener?
Sure. This is theater of the mind, so there's VFX of the mind. Describe what we'll be replacing the audio green screen behind us with.
Maybe you can tell me if there's a way to solve this problem differently, but so I was doing an animation, just a single shot to help out on a project recently, and you know, it's got a, it being a Node graph, I do it all in Nuke, because aside from being my favorite compositing app, I think Nuke is probably my favorite app for anything ever, because it's just great.
Get help.
But get help.
Yes.
It's great though. I love it. It's
yeah, but like favorite of anything ever, that's a little much.
I don't know. It would, like, Tweetbot would be a close competitor.
If only you could get your tweets in the Node graph. Wouldn't that be great?
Totally.
You just pipe it all to a text node. You can just do that with some Python hooks.
Well, I use Dr. Drang's Twitter archiver to pull all of my tweets into a text file, so I'm sure I could figure that out.
Yeah, you just read back the text file and then set a pace for it to scroll, and it'll be like the Star Wars crawl, only with tweets.
That sounds horrible. I'm just going to watch a Star Wars crawl of my own tweets.
Just loop the music from the crawl over and over again.
I could just turn on motion blur and then let it RAM cache for the next 3 years or something.
Yeah. Well, they didn't use motion blur for that.
Yeah, I know. Everything's better with motion blur, though.
Not text.
Anyway. Okay. Anyway, so I was doing an animation. It was mostly just, you know, motion graphics stuff. But the way it's built, I've got different pieces coming in at different times, and you know, they're all timed out over the plate, and I sent an email to Foundry support because I wanted to see if there was a way to do this. I have to every time there's like a change in the timing of the animation, or I watch it, I want to tweak a certain thing, I have to open seven or eight different nodes that are not, you know, they're not in the same tree, so I can't just use the top one and use the new dope sheet to slide them around and have it be parented. I need to manually open 8 different nodes and grab a portion of the keyframes and slide that forward, backward, whatever I need to do. And I wanted to create something called like node sets, where I could say all of these nodes, when I want to open and edit, you know, when I want to modify this particular portion of an animation, I need to open all of these nodes at the same time. And the folks at the Foundry were very kind to write, I think the guy's name is Jake, but he wrote me a couple little Python scripts that select some nodes, add them to a node group, select nodes, add more to the node group once you add more tools, and then one more tool that opens all of those at the same time, so I can open them all, adjust my animation, close them, and go back to what I was doing without trying to find all 8 of those, which the problem was I need to open all 8 of them, and I inevitably open 7 out of the 8 and then modify the keyframes, and one of them is screwed up, and I don't know which one it was, or I don't know how far I moved the other ones because I was doing it by eye, and it just drove me nuts because I had to do every one of those manually, and I had to undo 7 different nodes and then reopen 8 of them and reanimate that, and it was driving me insane.
Was it the same curve that you were using for each of them? The same animation curve? No. Oh, okay.
No, the keyframes weren't necessarily in the same place. They just, you know, somewhere around like frame 50, I needed to add in another like half a second or something, and then all of the other keyframes need to be pushed down the line.
Okay, so the keyframes were all in the same frames, but the values for that you were storing on those keyframes were different between the nodes.
No, they weren't even necessarily on the same frame. Maybe they all had, you know, they all had a keyframe on frame 50, but then after frame 50 they were all scattered about or whatever. It was just, you know.
Okay, but you just wanted to grab them all as a group. They were not necessarily the same curve and move them all. Okay.
Yeah,
I mean, I've done that before, and like you're saying, there isn't anything I can think of that would automatically do that, and so that's good the Foundry guy wrote that for you. I mean, couldn't you get the same effect though if you put all of the nodes on the same backdrop?
Yeah, but that's the problem. They're all animating different assets, so they're not all affecting the same thing. So I can't just grab them. I can't backdrop one of them because one of them is doing something over there on the right side of the script. A couple of them are over here on the left, and they're just, you know, it's like they're not right next to each other, I guess, is the way to explain it.
Okay, so that's fine. Well, sometimes in that case, a thing that I've done in the past is I'll make like a group node and just add parameters to it, just create my own parameters that reference, that are expressioned to whatever that is that I need to affect in the node graph.
Yeah, I suppose that's.
And then you can just edit that one master node, and you can call it master node, and you know, like set it so it actually looks important in your node graph, and so you don't lose it. And then you can drive everything inside that you need to affect. And if you do need to move all of the keyframes, then you can grab them all. And it's useful for things like if you need to adjust like depth of field values or something like that on multiple nodes. Like obviously, you're going to have individual defocus values, like where your near and far values are, that kind of thing. It's all going to be on, like, whether you're using PG Bokeh or whatever you're using. You can drive that one master node for all of them so that you can set those same values for everything, even though they all need to compute differently and be in different spots inside of the tree.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've done for a long time is I use a no-op node with a slider for controlling motion blur, because I, you know, crank down the samples for doing most of the work, and then when I want to render, I want to crank them up. But, you know, every transform node all over the damn place needs to have those samples cranked up, and I don't want to, again, try and find every transform node that has motion blur and then turn the samples up and make sure I got them all. I suppose the other way to go would be to, you know, change the color of that node so it sticks out real obviously, but essentially what the script does is it adds the word in node set to the description box on the node tab in each node, and then the Python script searches for that and then opens it if it has that in it, which is, you know, kind of a hacky way to do it, but it's you know, it's like tagging your nodes basically, and it works and it's great.
Okay, well, as far as motion blur and like depth of field effects and stuff, it's stuff that can be very slow.
Yeah, that's why we want to, you know, globally crank down samples, turn them back up. But the reason I liked the node set, the thing that they did for me, is because not all of the nodes are the same type. Some of them are transform, some of them are warp, some of them are grades. It's just, it's all manner of things.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm wondering, you still want to see like a preview quality level of it, is what you're going for. Okay, because typically what I would do is just like turn it off interactively if it was something that I didn't really need to look at right now. And so you can like bind... You can set up your own, like, in your menu.py file, like, you know, key parameters for things. And so you can actually have the enable checkbox. You can script that, so it's $GUI. And $GUI, that means, like, if you're processing something interactively, if the, you know, the whole Nuke session app is running, then it will have a value of 1, and so that'll be disabled. But then if you send that to like a farm or something to render, then it won't be enabled. Then it won't be disabled. So it'll be enabled and you'll get the whatever the effect is.
That sounds like a smart way to do things in a larger pipeline for me.
I can't take any credit for that. That was something I picked up from where I was working before. So
no, it's the smart kind of thing. I mean, I used to, like, when I turn the motion blur samples, I usually turn them down to 1, not off. So I do want to see what they're doing, but before render, I crank them up to 5 or 10 or whatever is required for the shot. But
yeah, I mean, well, everybody, there's a million ways to skin a cat. So
yep. Anyway, but yeah, I was really excited that Jake whipped up that node set script for me. It's going to be in my menu py file until they actually roll that into the application itself, which is great.
They are going to roll that into the application.
I told them to, because it's super useful. I mean,
oh, Dan, the boss of Foundry. good job.
Don't you know how it works? I pay them for an app and maintenance on a recurring schedule,
so whatever they have to do what I want.
No, I just hey, I don't want to take credit for Nuke Studio, but that was something I've been asking for a great many years.
Yes.
Although they still
something tells me it might not have just been you asking for something.
No, certainly not. But one thing, yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about things I've been asking for forever that aren't in the app, I want a hotkey like in After Effects to toggle a different frame from earlier in the sequence. So I'm looking at frame 50, and I want to see what frame 10 looks like. So I go to frame 10 and I click F8, make a snapshot, and I go back down to frame 50 and I can just toggle it on and off to see what the differences are. Super useful in After Effects, especially for color correction. So I toggle a different shot in the timeline to see how the color matches. And does not exist in Nuke yet, and does not exist in, well, didn't exist in Nuke Studio up until the announcement, so hopefully they roll that in before the release, because I don't know if I have mentioned it to you. The only reason I use After Effects anymore is for color correction, because it's got a solid timeline view, and Red Giant Colorista 2 is my favorite color correction tool set. But until somebody comes up with something better, but yeah, it's I can't color correct in Nuke just because the node base... the node graph and even the timeline view, if I try to use the timeline view, it's just too cumbersome, and I have to use After Effects for now, particularly because of that snapshot feature comparing previous shots. It's just not really doable in Nuke.
Well, I mean, you could pre-comp everything and then you could, it would be nimble enough.
Yeah, it's the problem is, I mean, they're all rendered shots too. I can stitch them together with the append clip, but I can't quickly see the color grade on a previous shot and compare it to a current shot without. I don't want to move the timeline or the cursor.
The current frame.
Yeah, the current frame. I don't want to change the current frame. I just want to see previous shots.
Okay.
I don't know how to do that any other way, but.
Yeah, I think the only times I've done something like that, like adding a time offset node or something just to slide things around just for previewing.
Yeah, so you could use a time offset node and disable it and re-enable it, but then when you scroll forward, you have to change the frame and the time offset.
Yeah, no match. I'm not saying that was a perfect solution. I was just curious what the limitations were. I don't do a lot of color grading, so
yeah, that was also, I don't know if you also saw, I mentioned on Twitter, I was testing out a really powerful new color correction plugin for Nuke. And it crashed, as beta plugins are prone to do, and it deleted half the nodes in my script. Like, I've had Nuke crash a great many times in a great many ways, but I have never had one crash and literally delete half of the script. And, I went into the text editor to try and see if I could recover it, and it was just gone.
I've had that happen. It's unfortunate, but, just save inversion up a lot. And
yeah.
Sometimes it'll store it, maybe, if you're lucky, in the text file, like you're saying, like you could maybe just add the missing bracket back and then ta-da, file. But that
was not the case, unfortunately. Yeah.
But that's what you get for using a beta plugin.
It was super great. I was using it, at the bottom of my tree, kind of as a viewer input process to get like a look to it, just to make sure everything was working. And it looked great. The tools were fun to use, and then I created a real nice look really quickly. And then as soon as I closed the pane for that node, the whole app just went away, and it would not open again.
Okay, so Dan, I want you to go after we record this, and I want you to download Yosemite beta, and I want you to install that, and then I want you to download iOS 8 on your phone. And then I want you to send out a tweet and say, oh, I guess this isn't production ready, because that's basically what you just did.
That's not at all what I did.
I'm not using a beta
OS. I'm not using a beta app. I'm using
a beta plugin,
an in-development tool. It's not even a beta plugin. The tool itself has been around forever. With any of these old plugin companies, really all they do is they spend 6 months to a year trying to figure out how to put a different wrapper around the exact same thing. It's funny because this particular tool, the interface is identical to the interface in its full-blown app. They just managed to put it in OFX plugin wrapper or something, because all of the buttons are just they look like Shake. They all have emboss on the buttons, and they all have weird tooltips that fade on and fade out. It's very clear that they have their entire app running inside of a plugin wrapper.
That doesn't really instill a lot of confidence in me. And no. Also, technically, with OFX, like, they could have just put that stuff on native Nuke knobs, as they call them, which I'm not a huge fan of that name. But they could have just done that. But so I'm surprised they went the route of having the whole Qt embed thing where they do that, because that's never seemed very reliable to me.
No, I mean, I think they're kind of partially in love with the look of their interface, because it's been
embossed.
It's tradition at this point. People are familiar with where things are, and you don't want to relearn it. I mean, if it worked, it would be great. And I think that's another reason things like Colorista haven't gone further. It's because it's kind of half using the built-in After Effects interface and half using a couple of custom things that they made. I could be entirely wrong there, but yeah, Colorista is my favorite color correction tool set still to this day. It's just great. Plus, you know, Stu has some great tutorials about how to use it and make really pretty looking things.
Okay.
You want to talk about Adobe products?
I'm not a huge fan. I'm staring. I'm staring right now at the Adobe Updater menu bar app, which has a one next to it because there's something that could be updated, which is I have a old beta copy of Premiere 6 that's on my machine, and I have the Premiere CC copy on my machine. And so yesterday, I upgraded the Premiere CC copy and hit the ignore button on the Premiere CS6 because I don't need Premiere CS6 right now to be updated. And apparently it's going to just bother me for the rest of my life as long as I don't update it, because that's it. That's the only thing that's not updated, and that's the only thing it says it wants to update. So thanks, Adobe.
I can't remember if I took that app out of my startup apps or if it's just hidden in Bartender, but yeah, it's, I read your post and agreed with pretty much all of it. I mean, maybe you can, do you have any insight as to why Updater apps need updates so frequently? It seems like Adobe is kind of, well, I guess Red Giant is kind of like that too, where the Red Giant Link app needs updating rather frequently as well. But why do updaters need updates so often? Or why do updaters need updates at all? Basically, aren't they just talking to a server and pulling a file? Like, why is it, there couldn't be that much complex code in an updater, could there?
I am not going to speculate on what in the world they have going on, other than I think that they had a system in place with Adobe Updater for pre-Creative Cloud stuff, and so they treat Creative Cloud as its own app, but then Creative Cloud is now in charge of updating the apps,
But what does an updater need permission to do? It needs access to the file system, and that's about it, right?
It needs permission to update itself. Because I think that is also a system limitation, where even any other application you have that's going to update itself, like through Sparkle or whatever app plugin it is, like it'll bother you to re-enter your password because it would like to re-update itself, change something on disk. And so you'll say yes, whatever, and it'll go off and do its thing and relaunch itself, and that's what it should do. But in the case of Adobe, you get a notification that you need to update one thing, and you can click open the updater, and it'll launch something that just opens Creative Cloud, which will say you need to update Creative Cloud, and then you hit yes, it will update itself, and then it will close and restart, and then it'll say you can update these other things, and you individually say yes to those, or you hit the update all button, and then it just goes off and does its thing. But apparently you can't ignore anything you're not currently using. So if you ever had a trial of something, or if you ever had a previous beta of something and you don't really want to delete it because you might want to open that file at some other time in the future and pay for a license to do that, well, your only solution here is to uninstall the application, because it's not going to let you just ignore that application until such time as you need it, unless you just want to keep updating it forever for the rest of your life, because I need two copies of Premiere to be updated on my machine at all times.
Well, I don't know. I keep one version back of pretty much everything, you know, Nuke in particular, because every time a new update comes out, I want to use it for stability purposes. But, you know, if it's worse, then you got to go back one. But yeah, I have After Effects, CS6, and CC. And I think that's, I mean, again, that's really the only Adobe products I use. Oh, I think I have Photoshop CS6 also. But
so you're paying, you bought those as standalone products. You're not in the Creative Cloud eco crap system, are you?
Yeah, I think that's the main reason I keep CS6 around, is because that was the last of the standalone apps.
Well, actually, I think Lightroom 5 is still standalone.
I don't know what version of Lightroom I'm on. Let me check. 4.
Okay. Well, anyway, it's extremely disheartening to me because their new plan system sucks. As I detailed in the post, they got rid of the single app monthly cancel anytime you want plan, and they just have the yearly plans, which you can pay for per month or pay for the entire year, but there is no longer any discount between the two things, because you're just gonna wind up paying the same exact amount of money either way. Your 1-year commitment is a requirement.
Yeah, I mean, it for them, it sounds like a smart business move with regards to revenue, but the way they're still talking about it as a monthly thing, it sounds kind of misleading, I guess. I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's very misleading if you go and look at the, compare the plans on their site. And they even have this very misleading thing of there's a plan for the complete package, which is only available for previous owners of CS products. So, like, you would be eligible for this, where you can download whatever Creative Cloud complete apps you want to, the entire suite of everything, for the rest of your life for $29.99. But you can only do that with a yearly commitment. You can't do that as anything other than a yearly commitment if you decide to do that with and it's only available for you, for CS customers. And if you aren't a CS customer and you want one app, you either have to commit to a full year or you have to pay for the full suite on the cancel by the month rate, which is not great because it's $75. So you're kind of boned on that if you don't really need everything. You just need to use it for one little thing for a month. But that's it. That's all they've done with their plans. Congratulations.
The thing about this that, I mean, I understand, you know, that it's less than ideal, but I try and put this in perspective just with, you know, again, the apps that I use every day, which would be the Nuke Production Collective. I just got a friendly reminder, renewing my yearly maintenance plan with them for about $2,000. So I just paid $2,000 for 1 year's worth of app updates for four apps instead of, you know, the entire Adobe suite, which is fine because I use the living hell out of these apps and I want all of the new versions and all of the stability updates and all the new features that come out. And particularly this update, I want Nuke Studio, which is going to come out in, you know, a few months. But the key difference being that if I decide I no longer want to pay for this maintenance yearly, my apps aren't going to stop working. I still have them and they will continue operating henceforth into the future.
Yeah. See, and I find that system to be much better. I mean, it's more expensive for sure.
Yeah, and it does seem weird that once you buy apps, you got to continue to pay a maintenance on them. But, you know, you talk about you get things like support. You get great support from, like I mentioned, Jake, who wrote those nice Python scripts for me to fix a hole in my workflow that I was too stupid to write myself.
Yeah, well, but see, that's also a big downside, though, is because of the expense, a lot of people aren't going to use that service. I'd be pretty interested to find out, like, the number of people that are paying that yearly fee versus the number of people that just buy the software every now and then.
Well, I can tell you my previous employer who has Nuke completely let all that stuff lapse, but they don't use it that often because when I showed up there to, you know, about a year after I left to help them out with something, their license server didn't even work and they couldn't open the app and they didn't realize that. So a year after I left, they hadn't even bothered clicking on the app.
License servers and dongles. It'd be great. What a lovely future.
We should find something else to talk about.
Yeah, you want to talk about movies?
Sure, let's talk about movies. You seen any lately?
I saw Magic Mike.
Yeah, you mentioned that you were going to do your Django homework and then you got distracted by
Django. Well, yeah, I was going to do the Django Unchained homework because you kept telling me how good it was in the previous episode. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to watch it. And then I was like, okay, I don't want to get off my couch. So what do you have in iTunes? And of course, it's not in Netflix. And in iTunes, it's $12.99 to purchase and no rental. So I was like, screw it. I don't really want to spend $13 on something I might watch once. So even if it, you know, theoretically, I could be hurting myself there. It could wind up being an amazing movie. And I could very well watch it several times. But I don't really know that off the start, so I'm not really comfortable throwing down for it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, yeah, I didn't do my Django Unchained homework, and I did the Magic Mike homework, but that's fine. Which wasn't homework. I just call it extra credit. So that was an interesting movie, because I'm from Tampa, Florida, and it takes place in Tampa, Florida. And I didn't realize Tampa was so amber colored. All I could think of when I was watching it, every time they're outdoors during the daylight, it's amber, like a yellow amber color. And so that's an interesting color grading choice. But it would have been kind of drab otherwise.
Well, Soderbergh has a history of interesting color correction choices, but a lot of them are in service of the feeling He's a big natural light kind of guy. He was one of the early proponents of the red cameras because he could run and gun for hours at a time, and he didn't need tons of light everywhere to be able to see anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like that's the night scenes when they were in Ybor and inside the truck driving home, which is fine. And it's great. You know, we had the light from overhead lights in the street, giving that amber cast to things. But when you're outside during the daytime, it was definitely not natural. So I found that just a little strange.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen that one, but I'm pretty sure I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, I mean, it happens all the time, but it's better than the last movie I saw that was filmed in Tampa, which was The Punisher with Thomas Paine and John Travolta.
Oh, man, that was right around the time where comic book movies were still full-blown cheesy, and then were starting to make their turn toward being more gritty, realistic, or whatever you want to call the, you know, when Batman started to reboot and change everything.
Well, it was post-X-Men, but pre Batman, so it was a weird time for Marvel, and that was just an awful movie.
Well, I like Thomas Jane. He's a weirdo, but he's good.
Yeah, no, I really think that he was a good actor. I don't object to him. I object to the movie because it was just so strange because it's supposed to be gritty and real and all this stuff, but you're watching it and it's just light and sunny Tampa, Florida, and so it doesn't really blend in very well. Like it really should have been New York. It doesn't make any sense to me why they filmed it in Tampa, other than the fact that they could get John Travolta to agree to do it because he's a huge fan of going to Clearwater for Scientology stuff.
Oh, is there Scientology stuff in Clearwater? I've been there. I went jet skiing there 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know.
Yes. Oh, all over the place.
I know they had anti-cot rods and humidity, and that's about all I remember.
Oh, well, humidity is not unique to Clearwater. That's sort of a state attribute, but definitely not so great. So it's good that they did something that I like better that was done in Tampa. The end of the movie I thought was a total letdown. I don't know if that was also your recollection from when you saw it, but...
It had a quote-unquote dramatic ending that wasn't terribly dramatic, if I recall.
No, it wasn't. Like, you could see it coming from a mile away that, you know, spoiler alert, he decides he doesn't want to be a stripper anymore and that he really loves the sister.
Oh, we're talking about Magic Mike again. I thought you were talking about The Punisher.
Oh, no. Well, wouldn't that be an interesting plot twist?
Yeah, The Punisher decided he didn't want to be a stripper anymore.
Mm. Yeah.
He would have a good steely stare from the stage that would probably work pretty well. But
it would explain a lot about why Travolta was a nemesis. But I give it a thumbs up on the first two thirds of the movie, but then the ending's just yeah.
You know, the thing that I remember taking away from it is, especially the ending, is the girl. I didn't enjoy her performance because I think Soderbergh is sort of known for pulling people who aren't necessarily seasoned actors and trying to get a performance out of them for sometimes the purpose of realism and sometimes because he wants to see how that goes. I'm thinking of what movie am I thinking of anyway? The young lady, I did not believe the majority of the things that came out of her mouth because her eyes were lying to me. But you know, Channing Tatum held up his side of the conversation pretty well.
It's a unique criticism. I actually thought she was fine. I mean, the thing is, she's not... she gives a performance that feels very... I don't want to say natural, but...
She feels like a human being. She doesn't feel like an actor.
She doesn't... Exactly. So, if that had been cast as, like... you know, some famous actress, if that was like Hayley Duff or something, then I think that would have been incredibly distracting and hard to follow that. So I didn't mind her very much.
Well, the thing about it is, I mean, yeah, she felt really natural, but, you know, there are reasons we cast actors for certain things is because they, you know, shave off some of those rough edges. And I think an actor would have been a little better at removing some of those things that made it pretty obvious that she kind of didn't really know what she was doing. I mean, not that she didn't know what she was doing or, you know, she was just that Soderbergh just left her out in the wind to just act. I'm sure there was a great deal of thought that went into that performance. It's just I didn't like what they did with the character, and it feels like her inexperience coming through the performance, but maybe that's what he was going for. I don't know. I just didn't. It's one of those things that I didn't believe the things that she was saying, and I did not enjoy watching her say them.
With I think maybe just a little too harsh though on her. I think the problem with her character is more that the arc of it, that she's. You can see that by the end of the movie, spoiler alert, she's going to fall in love with a certain lead actor of the movie, because it's really telegraphed to you in, like, the first scene they meet, and it just persists through the whole thing, and it really has nothing to do with the brother or any of that storyline that's going on. It's just sort of like, well, they're just going to get together at some point, and it really does fail the test of, like, does she talk to any other woman in the movie? Does she have another female friend? Are there other females in the movie that do anything else other than shriek and scream in the audience?
It's like middle school relationship dynamics. She does the thing where she pretends to hate you for three quarters of it, and then she really liked you all along.
Yeah, but so I had a big problem with that, and I don't think that's her fault as an actress, and I don't think that's Channing Tatum's fault as an actor. I think that was just not the way that should have been written. I think it should have been more unlikely of a pairing than it was, because if it's really going to be telegraphed from the first scene that they're going to get together at some point, then what's the point?
Do you think this is an instance where people watching the movie had pretty low expectations for nuance in the plot because, hey, Channing Tatum is taking his clothes off, and, you know, it's a pleasant surprise that there was any thought put into it in the first place? Or do you think that it was really just, on the whole, a poorly executed arc?
I'm going to say the whole movie is a poorly executed arc, because at the end of the movie, it all hinges on the only change being that he wants to stay in Tampa and make it work with her. And so then the rest of the production, everything else that's gone on, all the other alternate branching storylines, what's happening with Matthew McConaughey, what's happening with the brother, who is obviously not doing very well by the end of the movie, none of those things are changing by the end. Like, they're not, the things that happened in the middle of the movie, for the climax, they don't arc anywhere else. They just keep going on their trajectory. Their lives are set at this point. Like, he's just gonna keep having a terrible life, and, you know, that's gonna be what it is. And so the only resolution that you get is the arc of him deciding to stay in Tampa and not be a stripper and work on his furniture business and be with her. And if anything, she should be more upset that her brother is now a total failure than at the beginning of the movie.
Well, I think the movie kind of primes you for the fact that he's a shit and he kind of always has been, but... Yeah, I get what you're saying. You know, the other thing I was going to say, aside from the young lady who I've criticized just a moment ago, I thought the rest of the movie was... It was greatly cast. I mean, the people they chose for the roles were perfect for their characters, particularly that the brother, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but we can just call him Number Four. I want to, you know, it's kind of a backhanded compliment, but I kind of feel like he fits that character pretty well.
Yeah, and again, like you're talking about an unknown in a role, I think he does a really good job. Because I certainly haven't seen him in anything else, but I think he should be in other things, because he does a really good ne'er-do-well. You know, it's what he does, so good job.
I saw a trailer for, he's in like a really touchy-feely romantic comedy. I think it probably came out by now, but I did not buy that one bit. He's supposed to have, you know, a shady past. He's working as like a valet in like a country club or something, and meets some rich girl and they fall in love against all odds or something. But it's just it's like, no, I don't see you as the reforming I had a few troubles growing up kid. You're just kind of a dick.
I haven't seen that, but it's sort of ironic that that is also sort of what happens in this movie, only it's Channing Tatum and it, you know, being the reformer.
Well, Channing Tatum has a hell of a lot of charisma for whatever role he decides to play, so you kind of can't help but love Channing Tatum and whatever he does, except I watched G.I. Joe 2 the other day. It was on Netflix, and I don't know why I clicked on it, but
damn, oh
boy,
damn. If a movie's on Netflix, it's usually on Netflix for a reason. That's all I'm gonna say about that.
God, this being a weekend where I had a lot of free time, since Amanda's out of town, I watched way too many movies, and a lot of them were just.
You watch a lot of questionably artistic
okay, movies. Okay, let me just go through the list here, and you can pick which ones are the most questionable. I watched Pain and Gain. I watched Bad Boys 2.
Oh, I love it.
I watched Hurt Locker.
Haven't seen it.
I watched Ender's Game last night.
Refused to see it.
Can we talk about Ender's Game briefly?
But I refuse to see it, so what
based on the source material and its creator?
Yes, the creator. Yeah.
That's fine. You don't need to see it.
I mean, I didn't hear anything. Yeah, I didn't hear anything good about it, anyways. So I felt pretty confident in my decision to skip the movie as well as the book. So, although a lot of people have said that it was a formative part of their lives to read the book, they feel those same people feel less that way about the movie. So,
yeah. Of the few things that I found interesting, the particular one that I'm thinking of is that Digital Main got a production company credit in the opening credits, which you don't see very often.
Well, that was an experiment for them at the time, where they were trying to invest in the movie so that way they could reap profits from it at the end.
Yeah, like, what was the one Hydraulics did? The Alien movie?
Oh, the Los Angeles one they did after... They did it after Battle LA, which they worked on for, was it Paramount? Anyway, they did basically the same movie twice.
Yeah. So, and I thought, the visual effects work in Ender's Game was great, but, you know, there's a thing about books adapted to movies in general where when they're long books, they cram a whole lot of material into, I mean, even a 2.5-hour movie, every little bit of it feels so rushed and so unjustified that it's horrifying.
Okay. That's an interesting takeaway. So was that what you were going to talk about for that?
No, it's I could go into detail about why it fails on a great many levels, but I don't think it's really that interesting.
Okay, that works. All right, moving right along. What was the rest of the stuff you watched this weekend?
I watched Sin City. I still like the look of it.
But see, that's the thing. The look, divorced from anything else about it, sure, fine, whatever. But you can't. I can't watch it and divorce it from the rest of the things that are going on in that movie. The acting, the way the lines get delivered.
Well, but I thought that was kind of the point, though. The storytelling mechanism with the overdramatic voiceover and the whispering as, you know, things happen. And I don't know. It felt kind of true to the material as a graphic novel, and I thought it worked well for the tone of the thing. But I guess you feel differently?
Yeah, I never liked it. I've seen that, and I had a friend in college who was just obsessed and thought that it was amazing and loved everything Robert Rodriguez did and thought the effects were awesome and the whole thing, like Mickey Rourke being cast in that role, was great. So he was really into it. I, on the other hand, less into it. It just really doesn't hit the right buttons for me. It's really hammy and cheesy, and it's stilted too at the same time. Like, things aren't, they don't flow. They have a very stuttery performance. Like, they'll, you know, pause to deliver some really overly dramatic line and then go on with some other thing. And I only object to it for that reason, though. Well, like, I don't like the look of it, fine, that's great. I wish it was massaged a little smoother so that it was more of a polished film product. And I understand why they wanted to reproduce the source material so closely, but I wish it was just more fluid and flowing and natural sounding. Like, it doesn't even sound like the kind of thing you really would have watched. You go get an old movie from that era, an old film noir, and watch it. It doesn't feel like that movie feels when you listen to the same dialogue.
it feels like a comic book. Like you say, there are moments where the characters are basically just standing there and there's voiceover being delivered, which in my mind, I immediately go to a page or two, you know, full panel of the character standing there and then a shitload of dialogue in the margin, because that's how you would have to deliver the story in a comic book. And that's, I mean, for trying to be a comic book, I think it does that pretty well. Comic book that moves,
I guess. All right, so next. The only thing I approve of so far that you watch is Bad Boys 2. So continue.
Why do you approve of Bad Boys 2?
Because it's ridiculous. Yeah. How can you not approve of it?
Well, have you seen Pain and Gain? You said no?
No.
It's also on Netflix, I think. I think that's where I watched it.
Okay.
You should see it. I mean, it's Michael Bay's Bad Boys 2 on steroids. So I guess before we close out Sin City, you're not excited about the second one coming out?
No, not excited. I mean, I'm sure it will look very good.
Those trailers, have you seen them?
Yes, and they look fine, but I can't with that. Like, yeah. No. But anyway, you're telling me Pain and Gain, amped up version of Bad Boys 2 is your description of it?
Yep, with like one plot instead of like 12 in Bad Boys 2.
Mm-hmm.
So it's insane, but the fact that it's kind of a true story is if the movie is to be believed, that, you know, they talk about it in the end credits, they show pictures of the trial of when this actually went down. It's just like, it shows the stupidity of America and harebrained ideas and how they can rapidly get out of control.
Okay.
In a very, very Michael Bay way.
Sure.
Mm.
Okay, well, you won me over because it's on Netflix, so it's easier for me to do this homework than Django Unchained, so I'll do that one.
Don't you have an Apple TV? Just fire up the HBO Go thing and watch it there.
I don't have the login. Because apparently it's a reused password, so I'm not going to get the login, so that's great.
Well, I'll give you mine.
No.
Didn't the HBO guy say you're allowed to share that stuff?
No.
I guarantee he said that. Share your HBO Go password because it encourages people to sign up for HBO. Mm-hmm. There was a big thing about this a little while
but
ago.
But I'm not going to sign up for HBO. Our last episode, I said I was going to cancel
my, yeah, I know. That's why I'm saying I have HBO and you can watch it.
No, it's fine. Don't worry about it. I'll watch it. I'll watch it some other time.
I watched a bunch of trailers, too. I don't know. It was partially because, I don't know if you listened to the episode of Unprofessional with Mr. Sandwich on there.
I haven't yet. I saw you tweet about it, so you have, of course.
Yeah, he said he had like a family trailer night where they just sort of sat down with their Apple TV and just watched a bunch of movie trailers, and it sounded kind of fun. And I had already watched a couple trailers for other things that I was, you know, I saw Robert Downey is in The Judge. Did you see the trailer for that coming out?
Nope.
Yeah, it's kind of like the anti-Iron Man movie. He gets to really stretch his legs as an actor and do dramatic stuff. Yeah, it looked pretty good, but I just went through and I watched a bunch of trailers to see what was coming out, and there are some interesting things in there. I for the first time, I don't, as far as I can remember, the first time I saw a trailer, the movie's called Ragnarok. It basically looked like it was about the Loch Ness Monster, or some sort of monster living in a lake for a very long time and giant, you know, killing people who are living nearby. But there is literally zero dialogue in the entire trailer. It's all dramatic voiceover. And I can't remember the last time I saw a trailer where there was absolutely no people talking. Like, there's people in the shots doing things, but they don't say anything. I wonder how much talking is actually in the movie.
Hopefully very little, because that doesn't instill a lot of confidence.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, the monster looked neat, but a smiling family getting attacked by a giant worm thing. I don't know. It was very off-putting that I just kept waiting for somebody to say something, and they didn't.
Nah, I'll stick to the giant worm thing from Dune. I'm fully satisfied with that.
I haven't seen Dune.
You haven't seen Dune?
No.
Do you not like David Lynch?
Kinda. I thought he was great on Louis.
So no Dune.
No, I mean, I just haven't seen it. Isn't that also a book? Hello?
I just wanted to make sure there was enough disapproving silence. So, you hadn't seen Dune, and you don't know if it was really a book or not. Ugh, Dan. Dan, okay. Here's the thing. He did this movie instead of doing Return of the Jedi. So, aren't you interested in seeing it just for that reason?
Yes. Now I guess I was unaware of that. Now okay. I am interested in seeing it.
Now it's a total train wreck. But still, you should see it.
Although, if it were a more reasonable human being, I would think, oh, there must be really something here. But David Lynch, I don't know that you can trace a whole lot of reason through his decisions.
No, and I think he probably... Well, it's... It might be for the best that he had nothing to do with Return of the Jedi, but because the decisions he made in Dune are strange, but interesting, and so they should be watched, I think, by anyone really that is even remotely interested.
Yeah, I'll definitely check it out. I mean, you talk about, you know, we talked about this last time, but a filmmaker who has a very specific idea of what cinema means to them, and they make movies in that vein. David Lynch is another one of those guys who's really, really fully committed.
Committed is a good word.
He's also got really cool hair.
Sure. That's a requirement.
He looks like a director.
Yes.
He fits the role really well.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see him on Louis' show?
No, I didn't. I'm not really caught up on what's happening on Louis. I really like Louis. The problem is... It can get really oppressively negative.
I was just going to tell you that I just finished watching this last season, and yeah, he's really just doing whatever he feels like with the tone. I mean, there are obviously funny moments, but there are a lot of, he's getting really human with a lot of the feeling, and it's not the happiest of tones from time to time.
Well, see, but that's the thing, is like, I want to watch it because I really like it, but there's only so much of it I can take in like a dosage because I have so much human negativity in my life as it is. I don't feel like I need to like mix it all together and be like, oh, just more awful things. Just go for it.
Do you need a hug?
No.
Has life got you down?
That should be his follow-up show to this. It's just something that's just... rampant positivity.
I guess, you know? I mean, his stand-up is kind of like that.
Yeah, but I like his stand-up, you know, so it's not that I don't like him and I don't like the material or anything like that. It's just that it's just so negative that it makes it very difficult to watch a lot of it at once. And yeah. So I'm very behind, and that also keeps me from catching back up. But I deeply respect him.
That one makes me want to ask you, I mean, do you have a problem watching, I don't know how to describe it, there's a particular type of comedy that is cringeworthy or just kind of uncomfortable?
Awkward comedy?
Yeah, awkward is, you know, not really the right way, just the uncomfortable comedy. I really, really dislike that kind of stuff, just because the more uncomfortable and awkward they make a character, it doesn't make it funnier to me, it makes it harder to watch, and I steer clear of that stuff, or I, you know, turn it off from time to time, just because maybe it's because the things that I watch really, when I get sucked in, they really affect me, and I don't want that in my brain. Is that kind of what you were describing, or am I just still the sentimental weirdo over here?
Well, I mean, I don't feel the same way about the result, but I guess you could describe it that way. Kind of awkward stuff I would associate with awkward comedy would mainly be Ben Stiller movies. But
yeah, he's done a fair amount.
Because with Louis, it's not that it feel awkward, it's that it can feel negative, and so that to me feels different than like awkward where the result is positive or it's a laugh out loud fest or anything like that. Like I don't laugh out loud when I watch Louis unless there's like an actual like light humorous moment, which occasionally happens. It the rest of the time it's not funny comedy, it's really, you know, just tragedy. It's like Greek tragedy. So I feel differently about that.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's the same sort of thing. I mean, no matter what I watch, and this is probably why, the same thing with music, probably why I listen to a lot of silly upbeat pop music, is just because the feeling of a thing is really the most important part to me. And that's, you know, why I like movies I like, why I like music I like, is the feeling they impart. And, you know, I have fun arguments, discussions, whatever, with my my cousin about this, because he's one of those guys who listens to silly indie music just because he likes all of the fun, flowery words, and I really care a whole lot more about the feeling of a thing than I do about the individual pieces and how well they are executed. It's more about the cohesive thing and the feeling that it imparts to me. And, you know, that's, I guess it's taking things more personal than, you know, he might or other people might. But I like the way a movie can get really deep into my brain and make me feel a certain way. And because it can do that, I prefer movies that do it in a positive way or a fun way or, you know, when they do it in a serious way, I appreciate it too. But, you know, when it's a negative or an uncomfortable way, it makes me feel uncomfortable, and I don't like that sort of emotional manipulation in a negative way.
I mean, I guess that's one way of putting it. I haven't put that much thought into it. But yeah, I mean, I'm definitely... Mood is important. Like, if I am in the mood to watch something, or if you're in a bad mood and you watch something, you might not even like the thing, even if you would have liked it if you had viewed it another time. So I don't... But at the same time, I try not to overthink that, but I do generally tend to watch much intellectually lighter things these days, just because I find that I'm just not in the quote-unquote mood to watch anything that is very serious or oppressive. Well,
that's the beginning of it. I mean, being in a particular mood to want to watch something is obviously important. I mean, starting off in a neutral mood is kind of the ideal for when you're going into these things. But what I'm more partial to is the mood that I have coming out of something, not so much going into it. It's what the movie or the music does for me, as opposed to how I choose what I'm going to watch or listen based on my current mood. I mean, I use music like an antidepressant or something. It'll cheer me up when I'm just kind of blah,
I guess. Well, I mean, but see, that's what I mean, though, is like, if you're in the mood for something, also has to do with what kind of thing. Like, you might want to improve your mood, and so you would watch something a little more uplifting. But that, I'm not as deeply wedded to the notion that
just say I have emotional problems and I should seek help. But that's, you know.
Well, I thought that was just going to go unspoken for the duration of this podcast, so that it was just going to be implied.
We're putting everything on the table with this thing, so we might as well get it out there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so everyone who thinks Dan should get help, please tweet.
No, please don't.
At DANSTURM.
No.
Get help.
Oh, God.
That's what we call brand engagement.
Yeah, maybe maybe it's good that I spend a lot of time at home and I don't see a lot of people in real life.
I think this might be a byproduct of you spending a lot of time at home.
My insular nature has led me to increase the sensitivity of my receptors with media.
Yes, your receptors.
Receptors. Mm. I'm trying to go biological, so I don't just...
Yeah, you know, very biological.
Break down and admit that I'm a broken human being.
It's fine. We all know it. You want to wrap this up?
Yeah.
Are you in it? Have we deeply affected your mood?
Save that for another show.
Yeah, let's euthanize this episode.
All right.
Goodbye, Dan.
Bye.